This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Erica Harold, the Republican candidate for Attorney General in the state of Illinois. Erica is a native of Urbana, Illinois. She's a Phi Beta Kappa graduate from the University of Illinois. And in 2003, Erica Harold won the Miss America competition, which provided scholarship money to pay for Harvard Law School and allowed her to travel the United States on a platform to combat youth bullying, something she had experienced as a teenager in the Urbana, Illinois area. She's become a national leader in the fight to end youth violence and bullying, sharing with more than 100,000 students her own experience of overcoming bullying. Erica was met by a number of demonstrators who wanted to know her stance on such issues as the Affordable Care Act, women's reproductive rights, and Erica said, as Attorney General, she will enforce the law of the land. Although she herself is pro-choice, she said she respects and will honor the choice of women to control their own bodies and their own destinies. As Attorney General, she said, she will be someone who will represent all of the citizens of Illinois. She will focus on such areas as public corruption, use the office as a bully pulpit, in her words, to press for workers' compensation reform, take a lead role in the opioid epidemic in the state of Illinois. If elected Attorney General on November 6th, Erica Harold will become the first black woman in Illinois and only the fourth woman of color in the United States to be elected Attorney General. She sees herself as an individual who is capable of shattering the glass ceiling and helping women achieve their just positions in politics, community, and public service.
Well, good afternoon, City Club. It's such an honor to have this opportunity to be here with you today, and I want to thank those of you who took the time out of your very busy schedules to come out and to hear my vision for serving as Illinois' next Attorney General. But before I talk about my priorities and ways in which I think this office can be a more effective advocate for the people of our state, I'd like to share with you on a personal level why having this job would be such an honor and such a privilege. And I'd like to begin by sharing with you one of the events in my life that motivated me to become an attorney in the first place, because this experience shaped so much of who I am and how I'm dedicated to fighting for those who need a voice and fighting for those who are marginalized within our society. When I was in the ninth grade, I was the victim of severe racial and sexual harassment. It occurred at a time in which people didn't take the issue of bullying very seriously. It started out with teasing, taunting, and name-calling. It then escalated to vandalism of our family's home. It then persisted for several months, and I went to school every day trying to figure out how I could conform, how I could try to be invisible, to try to make the harassment stop. This harassment escalated all the way to death threats, and it quickly became apparent that I was not going to be able to be fully safe within that school, and so I was forced to transfer to a different high school. It was a time in my life when I felt profoundly marginalized and without a voice. It was a time where I felt as if I didn't have anyone that was fighting for me and advocating on my behalf. But that experience is actually what made me decide to become an attorney in the first place. I wanted to have the skills not only to be able to stand up for myself and advocate for myself, but also to be able to stand up and be a powerful advocate for other people. I never imagined that part of that advocacy platform would involve the Miss America pageant, because many of you know that I entered the Miss America pageant because I'd been accepted to Harvard Law School, was excited, but not excited about having to pay $175,000 to attend there. And there was no way that my parents had the means of being able to fund that. And so I entered the Miss America pageant for the very glamorous reason of trying to earn money to pay for Harvard Law School. And entering and winning that title enabled me to graduate from Harvard Law School completely debt-free. But winning that pageant also gave me the ability to have a national platform to be able to advocate for young people. And it gave me a national bully pulpit, no pun intended, to travel the country as an advocate for a community service platform of preventing youth violence and bullying. And what I was able to do during the course of that year was to juxtapose the power of two competing stereotypes. The stereotype that people often had of somebody who was a victim of harassment, and the stereotype that people have of somebody who wins a pageant. Those two stereotypes are in direct contradiction to each other. And one of the things I found is that sometimes you can use the power of competing stereotypes to be able to change the way people view issues and to be able to create and fight and effectuate change. And I would use that year to try to create change in terms of the public's understanding of this issue. Because at the time when I made this my platform, it was 2002, and most people didn't take bullying seriously. They viewed it as merely an adolescent rite of passage, as kids being kids. I remember the question I would always get from reporters when I would talk about my platform. They'd always say, "Why does this matter? We've always had bullying. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me." That was the perception. And I wanted to challenge that perception and to educate the public about how detrimental bullying was if it was left unchecked. And so I traveled throughout the country to advocate for anti-harassment legislation in states throughout the country and to advocate for the implementation of bullying prevention policies and programs in schools. But the moments that stand out most to me, I was able to speak to more than 100,000 students in schools throughout the country, sharing with them my own story, challenging them to exercise moral courage and to stand up for each other, and seeking to protect and empower young people throughout the country. Indeed, the moments that will stand out to me as Miss America from that year, not about the runways, not about limousines or being on talk shows. It was moments standing in gymnasiums throughout the country after presentations, because that's usually when kids felt comfortable enough pouring out their hearts. I'll remember counseling students who were contemplating suicide, advising students who were worried about a friend that was cutting, or simply listening as a student revealed for the first time that they were being victimized and asked for help. I learned that leadership requires vulnerability, and that the capital to create change is often born of the pain of our own lived experiences. And that's something that's sort of difficult in today's politics. Usually people lead only through strength. They lead only by talking about their accomplishments. But what I learned during that year is that leadership requires you to share things in your life that have been challenging, obstacles, because that's really where we connect on a human level. We may not always connect on policy, but if we've had similar experiences and we have that aha moment of recognizing that someone else who we thought was different from us had a shared lived experience, somehow we feel closer. And I think our politics needs more of that. People who are willing to be vulnerable, to share their stories, and to invite people to work with them to create change. Because it's that story, that sense of connection, that sort of creates what President Obama talked about, the fierce urgency of now. That's what we have to get back to. And at the end of that year, Fight Crime, Invest in Kids honored me as one of their champions for children, and I received a leadership award from the National Center for Victims of Crime. And on the night that I received that leadership award, I remembered thinking about ninth grade me and feeling that I had done right by her. And more importantly, that I had done right by all of the other students throughout the country who deserved so much better. I then went on to Harvard Law School and upon graduation began my legal career right here in Chicago. My areas of practice have been complex commercial and civil litigation and constitutional law. And I had the privilege of practicing at two excellent firms here in Chicago, Sidley Austin and Burke Warren McKay in Saratella. And I will always be grateful for the colleagues I met during that practice there who informed my perspectives on the law, who served as incredible mentors, and provided a fantastic foundation in legal training. I then returned to my hometown of Champaign-Urbana and am a litigator at Meyer Capel. And I'm so grateful to my colleagues at Meyer Capel for how supportive they've been of me during this campaign. You're not able to pursue an endeavor like this unless you have the support of your colleagues and the people who know you best. But during my legal career, I've also tried to seek out opportunities to serve the marginalized. And to paraphrase the words of Dr. King, to help bend the moral arc of the universe towards justice. At Sidley Austin, I participated in the firm's capital litigation project and helped to represent a man on Alabama's death row in post-conviction proceedings. One of the things I really admired about what Sidley Austin was doing was they tried to create a critical mass of people who were representing people in post-conviction proceedings in Alabama to try to change the legal system there and bend that arc towards justice. I also serve on the Illinois Supreme Court Committee on Equality, where we address issues such as implicit bias within the legal system. And I'm a commissioner on the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism, where we work on issues such as enhancing diversity in the legal system and bridging the access to justice gap. I'm sure many of you in this room know that we have those who have great representation and access to quality legal services, but then we have so many who do not. And if the law is to be able to fully protect people, we have to bridge that gap, and we have to consider it a moral imperative to do so. For the past 11 years, I've also served on the National Board of Directors of a group called Prison Fellowship. It's the nation's largest outreach to inmates and their families. Prison Fellowship advocates for enhanced educational and vocational opportunities for those who are incarcerated. And it's helping to be able to forge a bipartisan consensus on the need for criminal justice reform. Those are the experiences and perspectives that will inform me as Illinois' next Attorney General. They are what will enable me to be a powerful and effective advocate for the people of Illinois. At a time when our state desperately needs someone who can take the politics out of the office, put the people's interests first, and serve as a watchdog and independent check on government. And so as Attorney General, I will work to combat public corruption and hold both parties accountable. I'll use the office's statutory authority to investigate public corruption, to advocate for additional investigative tools, such as the ability to convene a statewide grand jury, and try to allocate additional resources and personnel to the office's public access counselor. The Attorney General also has a very powerful bully pulpit, and I'll use that to champion the importance of government transparency and accountability. I will also advocate for workers' compensation reform. We need a system that's competitive with the systems in other states so that we can stop the loss of jobs, businesses, and economic opportunities to neighboring states. Having more clearly delineated standards will both improve the efficiency of the system and will make it easy to fairly and fully compensate injured workers. That will be in the best interest of all Illinoisans. I'll also exercise leadership in stemming the opioid epidemic. In 2016 alone, nearly 2,000 Illinoisans lost their lives in opioid-related overdoses. That's nearly two times the number of people that were killed in fatal car accidents. If you think about that, the reality of it is sobering and staggering. And I want to use the Attorney General's office to highlight the need for greater prevention resources and also to work to streamline the scarce treatment resources that we have. We don't have enough resources to do all that we can, which means we have to do everything we can to better steward those that we have. And I'll also advocate for additional criminal justice reform measures. Things like problem-solving courts. Those are drug courts, veterans courts, and mental health courts. Courts that will give judges the discretion to take into consideration the totality of people's life circumstances. And if a judge believes that someone would benefit from rehabilitation, that should be within the judge's discretion to do so. We spend a lot of money incarcerating people in the state of Illinois, but our recidivism rates remain high, and our public safety is not necessarily enhanced. And providing people with treatment opportunities and rehabilitative opportunities not only will be able to save taxpayer dollars, but more importantly, it will be able to infuse our criminal justice system with a greater measure of dignity and humanity. I also want to expand expungement services. Many people who are released from prison or jail have a criminal record, and oftentimes they are eligible to have that expunged after a certain amount of time. But if people don't know about that or don't have the means to be able to pursue filing for that expungement, again, that's an access to justice issue where we are not meeting our burden to make justice fully equitable for all of Illinoisans. And so I will do what I can to encourage counties to have expungement summits where we waive fees on a certain day get lawyers to participate voluntarily and work to actually help people have those records expunged. That's how we get people back integrated into their communities. That's how we give people the second chance that so many Illinoisans deserve. From the time that I've spent actually going into prisons throughout the country, I know that people who are incarcerated are more than just a statistic. They have stories, they have life experiences, and many times they just need a second chance. And I want to be an attorney general who fights for everybody, those who are incarcerated and those who are on the outside. Because oftentimes those who are incarcerated, they don't have someone to be their advocate. And from the time I've spent hearing their stories, I know they certainly deserve one. As Illinois' next attorney general, I will be the first Black woman to ever hold that position in the state of Illinois. And I'll be only the fourth Black woman to ever hold that position nationally. It's a shattering of a glass ceiling that hopefully will pave the way for more opportunities for women of color. A couple of weeks before my primary, back in February, I went to visit my grandmother, a 97-year-old African-American woman who lives in central Illinois. She showed me where she had her absentee ballot, it already arrived, and she'd already voted for me. Well, actually, she asked me to check to make sure that she had circled the right oval, which I did. I wanted to make sure that she had indeed voted for me. But she said that she was so grateful to have lived long enough to see something like this even be a possibility. Because she was born at a time in which it would have been inconceivable for a Black woman to run for attorney general. She was born at a time when institutional barriers would have impeded her ability to choose the seat in which she sat on a bus. And she was born at a time where it would have been difficult to choose the school she wanted to attend, or even to be able to vote freely for the person who she wanted to represent her. But now she had the ability to vote for her granddaughter to serve as the state's chief legal officer, to make sure that everyone is treated equally and fairly under the law. And it's for people like my grandmother, who were denied opportunities, that I seek this office and commit to expanding opportunities for generations of Illinoisans to come. Thank you.
Okay. Erica, thank you very much. That was great. Hey, has your grandmother voted early already?
I think so.
Okay. But this time you checked, you trusted her to
She's
make the right
it.
Mark.
She's
she has it down. Okay. Great precinct captain here. Okay. If anybody has some questions that they would like to have our guests address, our staff will come around and pick them up. This is a member of our staff, Shelby, from Bloomington, down there.
Quincy,
Illinois, home of the Blue Devils. Okay. Well, we've got a number of questions here. We'll try to address as many of them as we can. The first is from Bob Gallo, the AARP Illinois State Director. Your opponent has a consistent track record as a legislator.
Thank you.
Voting for utility company rate increases at the expense of ratepayers struggling to keep up with their personal finances. Crane Chicago recently reported that one utility company has been hedging their bets, contributing to both yours and Senator Raul's campaign. The current AG has a track record of standing up for consumers. If you are elected, will you be the people's lawyer or the utilities company's lawyer? City Club, we ask tough questions.
All right, we're starting out framing the issues there. Well, I take seriously the responsibility of the Attorney General to make sure that when you are balancing the interests of everyone in Illinois. As it relates to the utilities, you start with the consumer's interest because that's what the Illinois Attorney General Act requires you to do. Obviously, you want to make sure that you have multiple energy sources within the state of Illinois because that also serves the consumer's interests. And so you take all of those things into consideration. But my starting point for this job is I read what the Constitution requires of me, and I read what the Illinois Attorney General Act requires of me. And the Illinois Attorney General Act says that as Attorney General, when you're addressing issues of utilities, your starting point is the consumer's interest in making sure that they're well protected.
Thank you. Okay. That was a fastball. Now we're going to give you an easy one.
Can I decide what's an easy one?
No. Sorry. However, I'd like to recognize Erica's sister, Alexandra Domerkant, who's down here. Thanks for joining us. Are there any more siblings in the family?
Yes, they're just not here today, yes.
How many?
So I am the oldest of four, and probably what's most notable is everyone in my family is a great athlete. My parents met at the University of Illinois when they were student athletes, and my three younger siblings went to college on athletic scholarships. And I had to enter the Miss America pageant because I had zero athletic ability. My highlight or low light was scoring a basket for the wrong team on the 8th grade girls basketball team.
Excellent.
So here I am, okay. Your next Attorney General.
By the way, are those other three sibs, are they residents of Illinois?
One of them is, and one is actually in Ireland.
Okay.
His wife.
He lives there?
Yes.
Oh. So we don't expect to see him voting in this election. Anyhow, this question is from Charlie Gardner, retired trustee, Roosevelt University. It's a tough question, but it's a great opportunity. Erica, will you...
I thought we were going with an easy one.
This is. Okay. Will you please set the record straight as to your views on the Affordable Care Act, abortion, LGBTQ issues, Medicare, and Medicaid? You can hit this one out of the park.
So I'm going to keep the question so we can just go on down the list. So I am actually happy to be able to address questions like this because, unfortunately, this campaign season has contained a lot of false information. And it's important that people have accurate information when being able to make decisions. So I want to give a broad statement to make clear. I believe that the job of the Attorney General is to enforce the law and to make sure that everyone is protected from discrimination. Full stop. That's the job of the Attorney General. And then when you apply the law, you look to see how your role is effectuated within the Constitution and the statute. So as it relates to the Affordable Care Act, I can tell you I fully believe in protecting Illinoisans and all Americans who have pre-existing conditions. And I think it's very unfortunate that my opponent has a commercial up that states otherwise. Illinois has a law that fully protects Illinoisans and makes clear that insurance companies are precluded from discriminating against anyone on the basis of pre-existing conditions. And I think it's very important that we maintain that. On the issue of the Affordable Care Act, the big issue is that there were a lot of Republican attorneys general that sued to try to invalidate the Affordable Care Act. I would not have joined that lawsuit for several reasons. First of all, that I don't believe that's the proper use of the office. When I talk about taking politics out of the office, that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. And when I'm talking about preservation of separation of powers, that's also the sort of thing that I'm talking about. Because any changes that should be done in the health care law, that should be done legislatively. It should not be done by an attorney general that is usurping the legislative role. So I want to make very clear, I would not have joined that lawsuit. As it relates to abortion, it's no secret that I'm pro-life, but I've made very clear that the job of the Attorney General is to enforce Illinois law and uphold law, and that would be my commitment. And I actually took a lot of criticism for that in my primary. When I said that I would defend all Illinois law, my opponent called me the liberal Miss Harold. But the reality is, Your job, if you're trying to be the Attorney General of our state, it's not to pick and choose from the laws that you would enforce and would not. It's to give your oath to uphold the Constitution and to enforce all laws. And that's what I will do. LGBTQ issues. One of the things I want to make very clear, I would never discriminate against any same-sex couple as it relates to adoption, as it relates to anything. And I find it very sad that my opponent continues to have ads up that suggests otherwise. I also want to make clear that there was a political fact check that was done of that ad that talked about whether I would discriminate against same-sex couples in foster parenting and adoption. And that ad was found to be completely false. And I want to be very clear. The job of Attorney General is to protect all Illinoisans from all discrimination. And that's what I would do. As somebody who's experienced discrimination and prejudice myself, I find it repugnant to suggest otherwise. And I would be somebody who would stand up for all Illinoisans. Medicaid and, is it Medicare?
Yeah, I guess so. Yep, that's what it looks like.
I felt like I was kind of on a roll there, and so, so then I had to look back down to see where we were. I think the Medicaid and Medicare issues relate, I think, to the Affordable Care Act, and that's, again, why I would not have chosen to join the Republican Attorneys General in trying to invalidate the Affordable Care Act, because all of those sorts of issues, they involve very sensitive issues of funding, and the choices that are made have implications and ripple effects for states. And so I would do my job to defend all Illinoisans' interests, but not to make decisions that are politically driven or politically motivated.
Okay. That deserves a big round of applause. You talk about meeting the issue straight on and not obfuscating and ducking and weaving. Tremendous. Thank you. Okay. This is from John Petrovsky, who's with the BMO Harris Bank. This is an easy one compared to the first two. You know that. Illinois has some well-publicized challenges. What are the top three things we should do to make Illinois a more desirable state and become a growth state again?
There are a couple of things that I think we need to do. First of all, public corruption is an issue I've chosen to highlight because it's something that detracts from our state's image. It's something that makes people more hesitant to invest in our economy. And it's something that contributes to a sense of cynicism about our government. So when I talk about being able to combat public corruption, I'm talking about things like patronage hiring, having contracts that go to people based on political connections as opposed to fair processes. Those sorts of things have to be combated because everyone needs to believe that if they are in Illinois and making investments, that they will be treated equally regardless of political affiliation. Our workers' compensation system also needs to be addressed because our system simply is not competitive as it relates to other states. It also makes it more difficult for people to be fairly and fully compensated if they are injured on the job. And we want businesses to continue to create jobs here. I've talked to a lot of companies during the course of this campaign, and one of the things they say is they are quietly leaving Illinois. They don't want the bad press that comes with making a big announcement. So when they're choosing where to expand, they'll just choose another state. So they may have a branch in Illinois, but all of the expansion is being done in other states. So I'm hopeful that a workers' compensation reform plan is something that will spur economic growth. But in terms of the pragmatism of achieving that, our current Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, set forth a series of reforms that she thought would improve the system. I would use that as the starting point because I would want all Illinoisans to know this is not a partisan issue. This is about creating a system that's more competitive and spurs economic growth for all Illinoisans. And then I think the final issue is one that's really important. People are really concerned about crime and violence and policing and issues like that. And the next Attorney General will be the person who has the opportunity to enforce the consent decree. And that give Chicago a transformative opportunity to be able to address issues like community policing, being able to restore trust between law enforcement and communities, being able to provide training, trauma-informed care, and also being able to hopefully provide more resources for young people who need to have economic development happening within their communities so they have real opportunities. And so those are the things that I will try to use the Attorney General's resources, time, and bully pulpit to focus on.
Very good. Okay, so you talked about the consent decree and that. We have a question about that from City Club member Jennifer Burrows. Jennifer, where are you? She's right over there, table 7. She'd like to know what your views are on the CPD consent decree, and how would you advocate for better policing and reducing illegal guns coming into Illinois?
I strongly support the consent decree, and I think that Lisa Madigan deserves credit for having the courage to pursue it, and I will vigorously seek compliance with it, because we do have this incredible moment and opportunity within our city and within our state to really, again, bend that curve towards justice, and also to better equip law enforcement with the tools and training that they need to be more effective at policing communities. I think in terms of trying to stem some of the gun violence, I think our state's attorneys, they will have the enforcement power. The Attorney General's office is probably 85% civil, so the Attorney General office doesn't have criminal enforcement authority, but I will continue to work with state's attorneys to see, are there additional resources that they need, and are there additional ways that we can all partner together, because we have to do everything we can to address that. Was there another part of it?
No. Oh, what would you do to reduce the number of guns coming into the state?
The state's attorneys. There's the Illinois Attorney General Act has several provisions that allow for concurrent jurisdiction between the state's attorneys and the attorney general if pooled resources or jurisdiction would be beneficial. And I've been in the process of talking to state's attorneys throughout the state to see how we can better partner, and that would be an issue I'd be happy to partner with them on.
Okay, now we have a really tough question, really germane. This is from Ron Aguirre, who's with Premier Business Services, Inc. Here's his question. If you win the Attorney General's office, where will you make your residence?
I've got to stay in Urbana. I will tell you, there are a lot of people who are downstate Illinois who really want their voice and their region to have good representation. And I would stay in Urbana also because I'm a fighting Illini person. I'm proud of, yes. So we have only one other person? That was an applause line, fighting Illini people. We're going to try that again. That did not represent our school well. I would stay in Urbana because I am a fighting Illini person. And it's a big part of my roots.
Great. Do you realize if you win and you live in Urbana and the current state treasurer, Mike Ferrix, he's a Rantoul man, the whole power nexus of this state will be shifting to the middle of Illinois. Unbelievable.
Champaign County's taken over.
I wonder if this fellow is going to try to sell homeowners insurance to you, Ron Aguirre. Okay, that's why I asked that question. Okay, we just have a couple more questions. This is an interesting question from City Club member Jane Johnson. Jane, where are you? Back there. As a professional woman of color, just how difficult is it for you daily when you have to prove your level of intelligence over and over again?
One of the things that having been Miss America has served me well, I would say, is I'm used to being underestimated. Oftentimes, people will have low expectations for me when they find out that I'm a former Miss America. And so I realize I have two choices. One, I can bemoan that reality, or two, I can step up to the plate and prove them wrong. And I know that's one of the things that I've been able to do during the course of this competition and this race. My opponent at the very beginning of this race dismissed me as a mere Miss America. And at this point in time, I don't think anybody would do that. And I don't think he would as well. What I have found is that regardless of your background, you should view the opportunity to be able to change the way people view people as an opportunity. And I recognize that when I go into communities, I may be the first person of color that they have seen pursuing this office, and certainly the first woman of color. But I want all people, especially young people, to know that running for offices like this should be something that they aspire to and something that they view as inevitable. One of the things I also do when I see young people, especially young women, I encourage them to run for office someday. Studies show that oftentimes women in particular need to be encouraged to run for office. And I want to make it my mission to have more women run for office, more women seek office, and more women be successful once they win office.
Thank you. We've covered a number of the areas suggested by some of the other questions, but here's two that we don't have, our final two questions. This is from Lawrence Oliver with the Boeing Company. What is your strategy going to be for going after public corruption?
I saw a murmur there. People were excited about going after public corruption. The bipartisan consensus that we're developing is already coalescing. There are three prongs of my strategy on fighting public corruption. One is to use the current statutory authority that the office already has under the State Ethics Act to be able to address public corruption. And there are certain triggers within the State Ethics Act that give the Attorney General investigative power if there's evidence of systemic misconduct that is disclosed in an Inspector General's report. So I would use that authority more robustly. I also would call upon the General Assembly, as many people who have sought this office have done, but I would call upon them to empower the Attorney General to be able to convene statewide grand juries and to be able to issue subpoenas in greater circumstances. That will allow the Attorney General to be more proactive and more robust in addressing issues of public corruption. I would also allocate more resources to the Public Access Counselor, because the Public Access Counselor is the part of the Attorney General's office that's charged with enforcing compliance with the Freedom of Information Act and the Open Meetings Act, our Sunshine Laws. Those laws are important because they empower members of the public, the media, and citizens to be more involved in their government and to be able to actually participate in monitoring and oversight. And what we fundamentally want in fighting public corruption is to actually prevent corruption from occurring in the first place. And if we can empower people to be more vigilant and we can give them the kind of advisory opinions they need from the Attorney General in a more timely fashion, I think that we can start to improve the level of integrity and transparency that we have within government. But it's going to be a difficult task, and everyone in Illinois has to demand better of their elected officials. One of the biggest challenges and hurdles is that in our political culture, on some level, we often have become accepting of corruption occurring within our government. And I think we have to do better, demand better, and actually fight for better.
Fine. Thank you. Final question. This is from Doug Ebendahl. This one came via Twitter, by the way. As a woman, as a person of color, if you were to meet with Donald Trump, what do you think the real Donald Trump is all about?
Well, thank you, Doug Ebendahl, for Twitter. If I were to meet with Donald Trump, I would actually, again, take the politics out of this. There are key priorities in Illinois where we need the federal government's assistance. I want Illinois to get every dollar of resources that is coming to us if a transportation bill is passed. If an infrastructure bill is passed, I want us to get those resources. As it relates to more resources for community policing, I would want to fight for those resources for our state. So if I met with him, I would be focused not on who he is or personality. I'd be focusing on representing your interests. I'd want to make sure that I used my meeting time with him to get something done for the people of this state. That's what it means to be your next Attorney General.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give Erica Harold a big round of applause.